Hello, Transgendered Hotline. Let me reassure you, you are all woman. That's right, you, sitting there, crossing your legs in that certain fashion, trying to keep your brow from going down when you get angry, and adjusting that wig cap in just the right way so when you sit at Starbucks, you make sure that nothing's hanging out. Thanks for calling Transgendered Hotline, and have a great transgender day.
One. Two, one, two, three. Johnny and Betty went to high school together, and Johnny and Betty went steady. Because Johnny and Betty knew that someday they'd be ready to say, forget what we've learned, we're gay. Johnny and Betty went to high school together, and Johnny and Betty went steady. Because Johnny and Betty knew that someday, not today, they'd be ready to say, forget all the lessons we've learned, we're gay. When the rings are going on to the fingers everywhere, everybody asking these two if they're gonna tie the knot, they nod shyly and say, well, maybe, and they smile wisely and say, well, maybe not. Betty learned to sew her own dress, and Johnny was a champion at chess. Ordinary kids, you know, just plain folk, but keep the love stuff to yourself and laugh at all of their jokes. Swimming with the tide until the tide goes out. Swimming with the tide until. Swimming with the tide until the tide goes out. Swimming with the tide until. Well, we know the world's not perfect and the world's not strong, so we know someone will suffer by the end of the song. Someone will get bashed before the end of the verse. The only question is who got bashed first, and it was Johnny, discovered in what they call Boy Town. A high school buddies out of nowhere grab him and spin him around, and then they hit him in the face and laugh and kick him to the ground. Johnny, with a swollen face and Betty's puffed from crying, agree there's no going back, being attacked is like dying, and dying is like leaving. So they ran, they didn't take much, they took what they could carry, talked about the future and decided they should marry. They should live their separate lives, but keep it quiet, keep it calm, keep the love to themselves and keep themselves away from harm. Swimming with the tide until the tide goes out. Swimming with the tide until. Swimming with the tide until the tide goes out. Swimming with the tide until. And what a lovely day on the beach it will be for our heroes, Betty and Johnny, and all of their friends as the crowd swooshes out to sea, leaving all of the different ones shining and free.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and this month I'm bringing you part 3 of my latest series on the music of transgendered artists, and it will include some special interviews. Starting the show was a fun cell phone ringtone, courtesy of the folks of Medialicious.tv. They've got lots of fun podcasts to amuse you and a bunch of special ringtones. That one was done by Alexandra Billings, who was my feature interview for last month's show. After the ringtone was Canadian artist Maren Cadell. The song Johnny and Betty came from her 1993 album Bombazine. While the subject matter of that song was gay, Maren is featured on this show because, as of 2003, she became a he. Maren retired from the music business following the last CD released in 1997. I want to add that Maren had a Canadian Top 40 hit in 1991, with a song called The Sweater. I encourage you to visit youtube.com to check out the quirky video for that song. Oh, but please wait until after this show, as I wouldn't want you to miss my two special interviews with the duo Coyote Grace and Joshua Clip. But first, my regular listeners know how I love to dig into our history and share musical obscurities, and this one is surely obscure. In 1978, a kind of dance-oriented album was released in Los Angeles titled The Jupiter Ray Band with Lily Rose. Lily Rose was the stage name for Lillian Tabor, though that was not her original name, but the one she took after her transition. Information is sketchy on her, but I understand she lived in the Denver area and was in several other bands, and for a time was a member of the Angels of Light, an offshoot of the Coquettes. One of my website visitors who knew her has told me that her looks were stunning, and she was also an amazing makeup artist, costume designer, and hairstylist. Sadly, she died in 2000 at age 48. From the Jupiter Ray Band from 1978 is the song Dance With Me.
Dance with me, darling, won't you dance with me? And when the
On to the first interview of the show with Coyote Grace. This is a duo made up of Coyote Joe Stevens and Ingrid Ion, whose nickname is Grace. Partners on and off stage, they are respectively from California and Ohio, but now work out of the Seattle area. According to the verbiage on their website, their love of music and for each other permeates every song, conveyed through smooth harmonies, driving roots rhythms, and captivating lyrics of raw life experience. They released their debut album, called Boxes and Bags, a few months ago, and I'm very pleased with it, as I immediately fell in love with Joe's voice. And you'll see why right now.
Now I took to the road the other day. My city walls, they crumble and fade away. Paid my respects by the waterside. It's where my God and my people reside. The sun, it shines now all across the land, from the California waters to the shores of Maryland. The sun, it shines now all across this world, but right now it is shining on a girl. And it's so bright. Said it's so bright, I would go blind.
The first question I asked Coyote Joe was to tell me about the new album.
It's called Boxes and Bags, and it was our first debut studio album. We recorded it in Seattle last year. It's all original material by Joe Stevens. It sounds a lot like us live. It's very indie folk. Alt folk, we call it. The title came about basically because we travel a lot and everything we own fits into either a box or a bag. So that's kind of how we live, and it's very telling of our troubadour lifestyle. We hope you like it.
Tell me about the name Coyote Grace.
Coyote Grace actually came about, it was a fusion of our two old stage names. Hers being Amazing Grace and mine being Coyote Joe.
On your website, you are open about being a trans man. Was being this open a difficult decision for you?
We definitely did talk about it a lot. You know, on the one hand, I want to be seen as a musician. On the other hand, I want to have visibility for trans people because that's something that's new. And I figured if we just kind of got it out there in the open, then we wouldn't have to be throwing it in anybody's face or anything. Like, we're just trying to be honest and be out.
Tell me about the song A Guy Named Joe.
I wrote that a little less than a year ago. It's kind of a mourning song in a way. I was really in the thick of my transition, and it was kind of about the strange feeling of going through this whole huge emotional process, and then kind of on the other end of it, you're just a normal guy. Then you have to relearn how to integrate into the world. So it was kind of a mourning period for me.
The winter's come to take me down a notch, a peg or a level or two. The swollen moon has got a sight set on me too. The devil's son gonna take me higher, higher than I ever been before. I told my mama, no, I can't take no more. I can't take no more. Come take me down to the empty farm where I grew up on the land. Build this childhood and fallen boy with my own two hands. I look around them bony trees and sunken cows. There's almost snow. Nobody knows nothing except what me and the crow do know. Who am I to weather a storm? But I go slow. I said goodbye to everyone I know. And in the morning I woke, and I was this guy named Joe.
How old were you when you figured out that you wanted to be a man?
Well, I knew when I was four, but it took me till I graduated college to really see that I needed to do this in order to carry on with my life. So it was definitely always there, but it took me a little while to figure out that I really needed to follow through with transition.
Joe, if this is an appropriate question, could you talk about what medically you've done to transition?
I've been on hormones for going on 3 years now, and today actually is the second year anniversary of my top surgery, chest reconstruction, April 27th, and that's about all I can afford at this point.
Did the transition process change your voice?
It did. It dropped it about an octave, and I had written quite a few songs before then and had to kind of change them around quite a bit. It changed my style a little bit, but not very much. I was always writing songs that were too low for me before. Just kind of telling, but yeah. There's a couple songs on the album that I wrote as a soprano. Now I'm a baritone. I had to stop singing for a good 8 months, which was kind of rough.
Have you found that there are some people who can't get past the novelty to them that you're a trans man when they should be focused on your talent?
Sometimes. We play for a lot of GLBT folks now anyway, and they're pretty cool about it. But yeah, sometimes after a show, all they want to know about is what parts I have, which is kind of annoying. But by far, most people forget, which I think is interesting, because I look so male to them, I think.
And I don't mean to neglect Ingrid, the Grace part of the duo. What challenges have you had performing with this act?
Well, I think mainly I performed with a couple of different ensembles since I started playing upright bass, and Joe and I had got together and played very casually before he transitioned, and we were a couple then. And then it wasn't until he kind of got through the first year or so of transition, got his voice settled, was kind of ready to start making moves to being in a band, that he was really ready to kind of invest musically. So during that, I was playing with another band, a bluegrass band called Captain Gravel out of Seattle with four other guys. And so when time came, when, you know, Coyote Grace started becoming more of the priority in my life and we were getting ready to travel and leave Seattle, it was challenging for me to leave that other band and to leave behind the music scene that I had kind of become involved in. So that's been hard. And another thing is I do the most of the booking and the promotional work for Coyote Grace. So, you know, it's hard to, you know, how much to put it out there in our promotional material that we're queer, or that he's a trans singer-songwriter. And you know, we kind of just play it by ear, and, you know, the ones who are obviously more GLBTQ oriented, we, you know, kind of make sure that they know that that's why we're applying. You know, otherwise we just leave it for people to either read between the lines or, you know, absorb what they absorb. But basically we're just out there being ourselves and playing our music, and if people pick up on it, great, and if they don't, whatever, they'll take away something from it.
Back to Joe. What challenges have you had performing as an openly trans artist?
Well, I suppose venue choices are always interesting. We get a lot of queer gigs because we get them, and we don't necessarily want to be pigeonholed as queer artists, but that is the community that has shown up for us and has supported us. I think mainly the reclassification as a male singer-songwriter as opposed to being a female singer-songwriter has just basically put me in a whole new category with different contemporaries and different peers. And I think that's been the roughest thing for me. I used to see myself right up there with the Indigo Girls, and now I'm in there with a whole new group of people, and I just sort of have to relearn how to socialize, I think.
Is there a song on the album that particularly tells your story?
I think Ghost Boy, that's also a little bit of a grieving song, but just kind of how I feel now, having lived this other life that is somewhat invisible to a lot of people. I love my life and I love who I am, but there's that recognition of what passed in a good way.
Feel the moment come, let it pass along. I remember the first one, their first day. There was someone here. When I came, she disappeared. I catch a glimpse in what people say. I am a self-made man, born with my two hands. I've been waiting for so long to finally stand. Well, I have no history, one day I just came to be. Well, I better know who I am. Well, I walk down these halls, nobody knows my name, and I know this place like it was mine too. She's everywhere. I turn a shade of blue, and I didn't come back here to stay. I'm just a ghost boy walking through.
Again, the CD Boxes and Bags is a wonderful album. You can find out more about Coyote Grace at www.coyotegrace.com.
This is Jennifer Renee Poole, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage.
That was done by my friend and Queer Voices co-host, Jennifer Renee Poole. By the way, she's the first transgendered president of a GLBT political caucus in the country, and we're real proud of her. I mentioned that Jennifer is one of my co-hosts on Queer Voices. On that show recently, we interviewed another talented transgendered artist from San Francisco, Julia Serrano. She seems to be a renaissance woman, as she's a writer, spoken word performance artist, activist, and in her day job, a biologist. She's just published a new book called Whipping Girl, a transsexual woman on sexism and the scapegoating of femininity. I first discovered her because in the late 90s, she was in a pop trio called Bite Size, and they released two albums. I love that while this was still pre-transition, she was talking about it in the lyrics of the songs. An example of this comes from their first album from 1999, which was titled, with tongue-in-cheek, The Best of Bite Size. Here's Switch Hitter.
Curtain call, with your arms around my shoes. Magical, magical, I stick out of the ground like a two-star.
Yes, she'll have her sex change operation, her mind's made up. According to her website, that song was actually inspired by her memories from when she was 15, watching her Little League All-Star game, when she made the decision. Of course, it took many years for the transition to happen. And being the writer that she is, she's captured a lot of that journey by publishing essays and books of her spoken word pieces. One of these books is perfect for me to share with you, as with it she included a CD. I particularly like the interesting psychology revealed in the title track from that book, Either Or.
It should have been no big deal, really. Just another Saturday night in some bar, some guy flirting with some girl, and she wasn't even interested in him, and it should have been no big deal. Except that I was the girl, and the guy was the first straight boy who ever took an interest in me. In the past, other men had hit on me, but only the ones who liked their girls to be boy underneath. But months of hormone replacement therapy had erased away most traces of my maleness, so much so that this straight boy didn't think twice before flirting with me. And it took me by surprise. We had talked for a while before he gently touched the side of my arm and smiled. And my brain went wild, with a million thoughts set off like fireworks, like my life flashing before my eyes. Years of potions and spells, cross-dressing rituals designed to conjure up the girl in me, just so I could catch a glimpse of her reflection in a bathroom mirror or a storefront window. And I wasn't even into this boy, but he made me blush. His flirts felt like hard-won accomplishments. Years of suffering and sacrifice all paid off, all because some random guy saw a real girl when he looked into my eyes. Our language doesn't have the words to describe it. This is the sort of thing that ordinarily gets taken for granted. From the time the doctor announces it's a girl or it's a boy, most people's gender is written in granite. But my gender is more like a carrot on a stick. It's always dangling right in front of me. Because I may pass as a woman, but I have a male past that runs 30-some years deep. And it's full of memories that I don't regret, secrets that I shouldn't have to keep. And every time I meet a stranger who turns into a friend, I know it's only a matter of time before I find myself telling them. And I've seen that look hundreds of times when what I am changes in someone else's eyes. And they usually act nonchalant and polite, but from that point on, I know they can't help but see the boy in me. And I'm no longer quite the girl that I used to be. My gender is like a boulder that I roll up a hill each day, only to have it come crashing back down on me. And that's why it's so tempting for me to just lose myself in those rare moments of absolute authenticity, like when that straight boy flirted with me. Because a part of me wants so desperately to be 100% female. Yet somehow, the burden of a million sins of omission seems like too high a price to pay for the privilege of simply blending in. And I know what the real problem is. Gender is exclusive. It's always either or. And I guess that makes my gender none of the above. Because my gender is the answer to a trick question. It's like that optical illusion where you either see a vase or two faces, but you can't see them both at once. My gender is more than the sum of my anatomical parts, and you can insist on seeing me as either female or male. That's up to you to decide. And if you still don't get what I'm trying to say, well, that's okay. Because my gender takes more than 3 minutes to describe.
Again, that was Julia Serrano from her spoken word CD, Either Or. Her website is an education and a fascinating visit. That's at www.juliaserrano.com.
This is Josh Clipp, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage with J.D. Doyle.
And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at the photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Up next is the main interview for this month by another new artist, Joshua Clipp, and I'm very pleased with this one. I found his answers interesting, articulate, and done with style and humor. Someone I'd like to know. So far, he's released an EP last year called Patience, and his full-length debut album, Won't Stop Now, came out this spring. Before we start the interview, here's just a bit of one of his songs called Time We Don't Have to Waste.
Baby girl, how you been? At the spot with your friends. Same old thing you told me then. You didn't have to lie again. What they say is true. The mirror can be very cruel. Everything you've done to me, you know I did it too, girl. And it's sad all the time that we waste, making others believe we're okay. Just make it
Joshua, tell me about the new CD.
This new album is called Won't Stop Now, and it's called that because I literally had to risk everything to get here, and now that I am, I'm only getting started. And about 3 years ago, I started gender transition knowing that it might result in never being able to sing again, but I had to take that risk because it was really my only shot at finding peace. And here I am 3 years later, and I've released my first complete post-transition album, and the music on the album crosses genres and boundaries just like I live my life, but throughout it there's a message of hopefulness and taking risks to find your own peace. And every time someone says to me, Josh, your music has changed my life, I know I've done my job in this world as an artist, and it's a privilege to move people with my music.
Your EP was called Patience, and your album is Won't Stop Now. What's the significance of those titles?
Yeah, the EP was called Patience because that's what it took for me to get to that place where I could even start recording again. When I was contemplating gender transition, I learned that one of the things that would happen naturally was that my voice was going to drop. And I did a lot of research on what that would mean and for me vocally as a singer. And there wasn't anything out there. There was no information on how it would turn out on the other side. And ultimately, I had to make a very heart-wrenching decision to transition, knowing that it could mean I wouldn't ever be able to sing again. But I had to let that go. I had to literally let go of my ability to sing to find my own peace in my life, to be willing to know that that might not be there when I got through all of this. And of course, not being one to just want to let things go completely, I took voice lessons and I visited with a voice specialist at Stanford, who actually followed me through the process and is going to publish the first article on something like this. And after a year and a half, I finally got back into the studio, and it seemed to me that the only thing I could call my first EP was Patience, because that's what it took with myself and with my voice just going through that process, a very painful, slow letting go process of the voice that I used to have.
And the title of the new one?
The title of the new one is Won't Stop Now, because now that I'm here, man, it's on. I'm going for it. You know, I've always loved to sing. Singing has always been my expression, but I couldn't really get behind it pre-transition because it didn't feel like it really expressed me as a human being. it was a good way to express emotion, but it wasn't true to who I was.
Did it feel like your voice didn't match yourself?
Exactly. Exactly. There was always these moments. There was always that moment at the beginning of a gig. We'd be setting up, be sound checking, you know, my musicians would be setting up if I was working with a live band, and people would be kind of gathering around if it was in a bar, you know, getting their drinks or whatever in their conversations. And there's always that moment when I opened my mouth to sing the first song, everybody in the place would turn around and look at me like, where was that voice coming from? Because it was so completely different from, you know, my physical presentation. It's very masculine. My voice was very feminine. And so it didn't match up at all. And like I was saying before, I couldn't get behind it. I couldn't get behind myself as an artist completely. And now, even though I still work hard on my voice, I'm still working hard. My voice is still getting better, getting stronger, getting more flexible. I'm just so thrilled about being able to sing at all. And being able to put myself out there in the world as a vocalist.
I guess this would be a great time to ask about the significance of the song Little Girl.
Little Girl, the historical significance of it is that it's the first time that a trans man, that would be me, has recorded a song using both pre- and post-transition vocals. And the way that happened, I've had the privilege of working with the same co-writer and producer for about 6-7 years now, Christopher Cloud. And we used to write and record music back in the day, and we had recorded Little Girl years ago. Then later I went through gender transition, and afterwards, when we were thinking about new music, I said, well, you know, maybe we should look at some of those old tracks. Maybe there's something I can, you know, make out of that and do like almost like a duet with myself. And we pulled out the Little Girl track, and I listened to it, and I got rid of the verses. I rewrote the verses. We kept the hook, and the result is what's on my album. And the verses I rewrote, it's a really personal song on a lot of levels. I mean, the verses I wrote really about my own experience and the experience of other trans people around transitioning, of sort of hitting that rock bottom place where, you know, I've got to make a change. I've got to do something here. And then moving through self-affirmation, you know, finding, looking in the mirror, and even especially I think for trans women have such a hard time when they look in the mirror and what they see doesn't match how they feel, and what they put out into the, you know, the ways that they are perceived in the world doesn't match how they feel. And trans men, I think, feel that a lot too. But finding self-affirmation regardless, which the way that I reflect that in the lyrics, I say there's no mirror that reflects your worth. So no matter what you see in the mirror, it doesn't stand for what your worth as a human being. And then finally, the song just ends on a very hopeful, positive note of closing your eyes and dreaming of this new world, whatever that is for you. What's interesting is that in writing the song and recording it and playing it for friends and loved ones, The first thing that they would say to me is, this, it doesn't even matter if this is about transition or not. This is just about a human experience of going through something really difficult. But in the process of recording it, it was a very cathartic process for me, because it sort of culminated that letting go that I referred to earlier. You know, singing alongside that voice that used to be mine and letting that go. You know, just sort of literally telling that old voice, you know, don't worry, it's going to be okay, in a way that I wish I could have told myself when I didn't know what was going to happen.
You've heard that line a thousand times. Find
How would you compare performing and creating your music before and after your transition?
I would say that now everything just seems to fit better. Everything just seems to feel more comfortable. I would write a song pre-transition and sing it or perform it, and it just felt too, well, it felt too girly. And it just it didn't feel right. And now it just, everything makes, it just makes a lot more sense. It just, it fits. You know, what I'm saying, it fits where I'm coming from, and the voice fits, and it feels a lot more cohesive, integrated.
I've read that you came out of the closet twice, first as a lesbian.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I think a lot of people probably, even trans people, have that experience. It's sort of, it's certainly, I think, easier, in a physical sense anyway, to come out as gay than it is to come out as trans. And that was just my way of trying to cope, trying to make sense of my feelings and what I needed out of my life. And it, you know, it worked for a while, but ultimately that wasn't a perfect fit. And so that's when transitioning happened and coming out as trans.
What has been your experience regarding obtaining male privilege?
It exists. It exists. My experience of it, it's, I'll tell you, JD, it is mind-blowing. Guys don't even know it exists. And women, never having experienced it, don't even know what they're missing out on. It's just a way that the things that people assume about you, they listen to you more, people smile at you more, people take you more seriously. You know, there's just a certain level of respect that you're given. It's, I can't even necessarily put my finger on it, but it's really, it's astounding. And, It exists, and it's kind of mind-blowing.
Trans men are probably the only people who can realize this.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And, you know, in addition to male privilege, I think, you know, speaking to our community, the gay and lesbian community, a lot of us also get heterosexual privilege. I know that, you know, my girlfriend and I experience that all the time. When we were seeing each other pre-transition, the ways that people treated us, you know, nobody was outright homophobic or outright disrespectful, but there are a lot of subtle differences between the ways people treated us then and the ways that they treat us now, perceiving us as a heterosexual couple.
Wow, heterosexual privilege. I've not heard it said that way.
Without a doubt. And the example that she gives, if you were to ask her, is, especially, you know, when we're traveling, you know, we'll stop at a B&B or, some breakfast place or something, and people just engage you more in conversation, and they smile at you more. Aren't you cute? And what are you two doing this weekend? And that sort of thing. You know, and nobody would be, if we were in that same position, you know, 4 years ago, before I transitioned, it isn't that people would, you know, look at us with disgust and treat us in openly discriminatory ways, but they wouldn't engage you as much. You know, they wouldn't be as sort of affirming of your relationship by engaging you.
Do you know a lot of other trans men?
As I go along, I seem to pick up trans guy friends, which is, you know, I don't actively seek out trans men as friends, but we sort of gravitate towards each other, I find, because we are really the only people who can sort of truly understand each other's experiences. And so when I hang out with my trans guy friends, it's like a small vacation, because I feel like I can say anything about any experience and they'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
I'm curious then about your observations, and I'm going to deliberately use the term sexual attraction instead of sexual orientation. Could you make any comments about the sexual attraction of trans men? And what I mean is, from your observations, do you think more are attracted to men or women?
That's a really interesting question, and you're probably the first person that's ever asked me that. I think that probably the majority of trans men before they transition start out as lesbians. I think. I'm generalizing a little bit here. And as trans guys go through transition, my observation is that a lot of guys, you know, they feel freer to check out being with men or being with women or whatever. And I think that, you know, I don't know that I can exactly put my finger on that. I think part of it is just hormonal. They have all this testosterone, they need to work it out. And let's face it, you know, there's at least here in the Bay Area, plenty of men to work it out with. But I think part of it is also sort of an emotional thing, because as trans men are recognized more and more as men, they can kind of let go of all that baggage that we carry around as being perceived as women and engaging with a man as a woman. You can engage with a man as a man. You're sort of on equal footing, if that makes sense. Does that answer your question?
Well, in a way, do you know any trans men that are coupled with men?
I know trans men that have dated men. Any, like, permanently coupled? I know they're out there, but I don't know them personally.
I've heard one theory that more trans men end up with women because what gay man would be satisfied with someone who wasn't a man originally?
No, I think there's a lot of gay men who are actually really into it. At least, judging by how much I get hit on.
Okay. Well, you are pretty cute. Back to the interview.
Back to the interview.
Which song on the CD seems to be the, I don't know, audience favorite?
Well, hands down, that's Little Girl. And, you know, if you go on iTunes and you look at my song list, it's like, that's the top song. Everybody likes that song. But actually, a song that a lot of people like also is My Funny Valentine, which is one of the two jazz tracks that are at the end of the album. The two jazz tracks almost didn't make it on the album. They were basically an afterthought. We'd recorded all of the, you know, all of the sort of R&B poppy dance stuff, and then a couple weeks before we were going into the final production stages, Christopher said, you know, what about throwing a couple of jazz tracks on there? And yeah, at first, my first reaction was, what? You know, how does that work? But then I thought about it a little bit more, and I really got into the idea, because that's the kind of music I love doing, that kind of music. I grew up on that kind of stuff. It just so happened that my old band, who we broke up not because we didn't like each other, but because everybody moved to different parts of the country. But my whole band happened to be in town all on the same weekend. This perfect alignment of the stars, and we rented out the studio for one night from about 11 at night till 2 in the morning. And we recorded Summertime and My Funny Valentine. And Summertime, which is a song that's usually performed by female vocalists, is a song that I did with that band before I transitioned. And what's funny about it is that now I sing it exactly an octave lower. And so that song kind of represented the old. And then My Funny Valentine is a song that I style after my male idol, who's Chet Baker. And so that kind of represents some of the new. People really dig My Funny Valentine.
My funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart. Yet you're my favorite work of art.
How has your music evolved over the years?
Well, you know, it's kind of a tough question, because most artists have the benefit of having the same voice their entire life. And so they kind of have this, they can follow their progression. I feel like I had one voice, and then there's this big wall where that voice stops and this new voice starts. And so it's really hard for me to say how it's progressed, because I feel like I've literally been singing with two different voices, and this voice is very new to me.
What have you learned about life from doing this album?
That is a big question, JD. Let me think about that. What have I learned about life from doing this album? I'd have to say that if I've learned anything, this is going to sound hokey, but it's true, that truly anything is possible. And what I mean by that is, for instance, when I look at Little Girl and I hear my old voice and I hear my new voice, if I can do that, what can't be done? And if I could go through everything that I had to go through to get here, and I'm here, nothing seems impossible. So I think that's, and I hope that people hear that when they listen to the album. Sounds like that's a pretty hefty goal, pretty lofty goal for what most people consider a pop album. But it's true. It's true. I do believe that the album and the music on it not only changed my life, but it changes the lives of people that listen to it. I get emails from people around the world, and it doesn't matter. Trans, not trans, straight, gay, male, female, it doesn't matter. People hear it and are truly moved by it, and that's just such a privilege and such an honor.
Tell me about the guest artists on your CD.
There are a number of amazing guest artists on my CD, and what I want to point out about them before I go into talking about who they are is that Christopher, my co-writer, and I made a very specific effort to include, to use LGBT artists in the making of this album. Of course, there's Christopher and myself, Christopher who's gay and me being trans, and then there's artists like Catastrophe, who is a trans rapper, trans man rapper, and Hollywood, who is a gay artist as well, and then who's not listed on the album, much to my chagrin. I must have been very tired when I was proofreading the text for the album, but my brother and my dad, actually, who are both openly gay, do backups on Tell Me The, one of the tracks on the album. So those are your guest artists, and really drawing from our community. Oh, and then the Rescue Me remix was also done by a trans man.
Tell me about appearing on the Tyra Banks Show.
That was a trip. Yeah, they contacted me because they were interested in having my girlfriend and I come on the show and talk about being in a relationship with a trans person. And, I said, sure, I'm happy to do that, but only if I can talk about my music too. You know, ever the opportunist that we artists have to be, that's what you got to do. Just pimping yourself out.
How did it go over?
Really well. It really well. My girlfriend and I went on the show, and we did end up talking about a relationship. And, you know, Tyra, her questions I thought were okay, and it was great. They played a couple clips of Little Girl on the show, so I feel really fortunate for having had that experience. And of course, now I have a little press quote from her, so hey, that is just outstanding. What's funny about the Tyra Banks show, the producers, you know, they do all these pre-interviews, and that's basically when I set my boundaries and said what I was, what and wouldn't talk about. And, you know, like, they asked me my old name. I'm like, I can't tell you that. It's none of your business. You know, and they asked me, you know, about surgeries, specifically about lower surgery. And I said, I'm not going to tell you that either. You know, again, none of your business. They said, okay, okay. And the producers were actually pretty good about it. They said, we're just warning you, and you know, Tyra might ask you. I said, okay, she can ask. And she did. And my answer to her was, you know, a lot of guys like to talk about what's in their pants, and I'm just not one of them. That is not on the show. They cut it. And I'm so bummed that they cut it because yeah, I feel like trans people watching the show deserve to know that they don't have to answer that stuff. But, yeah, they cut it. They cut it. And it's just such a drag because, you know, the two interviews before me were with trans women and their partners. And it was just, you know, just surgeries and how do you do it and blah, blah, blah. It was gross. You know, and I really wish that after all of that, there'd been at least one example of somebody standing up and saying, you know what, you don't need to know that. That's not your business. You know, and to do it with some class. But apparently I gave Tyra too much of a smackdown. They had to edit it out.
And I understand your music has been on The L Word.
Yeah. Little Girl was on The L Word. It was in on last season, season 4, in episode 408 for anyone who's an avid follower of The L Word. And it was during a sloppy drunk love scene, which when they, you know, when you're going through the process of getting your song on the show, they send you a license agreement, and they actually describe for you in the agreement what is happening on the show when your song plays. And so I'm reading this scene, and I'm thinking, oh, what a drag, you know. This song I'm so proud of and poured my heart into is going to be playing while two people are hooking up sloppy drunk. But, you know, then the more I thought about it, I realized, wait, that's perfect. Everybody will be paying attention to what's happening on the screen. You know, so it wasn't some horrible, you know, background scene at a cafe where there's a bunch of, you know, din. Above the din, perhaps you could hear my melodious strains. You can actually hear it because they're hooking up and one of the characters picks up a remote and turns on the stereo and my song came on. Pretty cool.
I like your video of Rescue Me. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, Rescue Me is... Christopher and I consider that sort of the single. We're really excited about that song. It's definitely got more of a rocky R&B tinged dance feel to it. And, you know, it features Hollywood rapping on it. And we did the music video with Margaret Cho, which is really exciting to get a chance to meet her and work with her. And through a friend of a friend, she asked me if I would want to do one with her. Of course, my answer was, let me think about that. Yes. And so, yeah, we had that opportunity to do it, and it was awesome.
In the mirror, the guy that I see is the guy that was once so naive. Saw the real you until the day that I saw me. Soul survivor through thick and thin. Not the type of person to give in. So I'm asking myself, on you can I depend? If I lost myself, would you help to find me? Forgot my way home, would you remind me? Don't get me wrong, I'll do fine on my own. But if I'm ever truly in need, would you rescue me? If I lost myself, would you help to find me? My way home, would you remind me? Sometimes blurred, I'm not sure what I see. The reflection or it's really me. But wherever the line, strength is my reality. Time for two, not just one. Got a lot of living to be done. So I'm asking you, girl, do you wanna come along? If I lost myself, would you help to find me? Forgot my way home, would you remind me? Don't get me wrong, I'll do fine on my own. But if I'm ever truly in need, would you rescue me?
rescue.
In the mirror, trying to find my reflection. I'm trying to check on the soccer connection. Is you here for good? Are you here for keeps? I'm here to win. Long strides and leaps. Chill, just take a seat. Cause everything is good, air and seas. I'm here for good. I'm here for keeps. I play to win. Long strides and leaps.
Would you help to find me? If I got my way home, would you remind me? If I cried like a baby, would you comfort me? If I'm ever truly in need, would you rescue me? Or would you leave me stranded? Jump on the plane before it landed. If I broke both my legs, would you carry me? If I'm ever truly in need, would you rescue me?
The video kind of, in a way, sets up my next question. I understand that many trans people go stealth after they transition. From seeing your photos and video, you look totally male and therefore could easily pass. Did you struggle with whether you would be out as a trans person?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. After my EP Patience came out last August, there was a local paper that wanted to do a, they did a big article on the song. And I remember feeling, just as an artist, really excited that I was getting press and, you know, a photo was going to be in the paper and it was this big, long article. And then the morning that the paper came out, I was standing there in my kitchen and I suddenly felt really down. I suddenly felt like, oh, great. Now the world knows. Now I'm out there. Josh is trans, you know. Anybody that didn't know is gonna know now. And I started getting kind of down about it and feeling really, you know, just like, great, nobody's gonna accept me just as a man. Now there's gonna be this thing. And the more that I thought about it, though, I realized that ever since I can remember, all I've ever wanted to be was a singer. All I've ever wanted to do was be out there and you know, be a rock star, as it were. And you know what? It may not be perfect. It certainly is not what I pictured in my head when I was 4 years old. But I'm doing the best I can with what I have. I'm doing it, and a song, putting it out there, a song like Little Girl, I know that I outed myself to the world with that. I knew what kind of press that was going to generate and how people were going to, you know, what people were going to write about that. But every time I get an email from some kid or some trans man across the country that says, your song helped me today. Your song changed me. Your song made me feel hopeful. You know what? Forget my crap about needing to just, you know, about wanting to stay in the closet or something like that, forget it. That's more important. What I'm doing with it is more important than staying closeted with it. I would much rather just live my life openly and honestly than strain to stay in the closet.
Do you think of yourself as an activist?
That's a great question. I often say to people, I'm really not an activist, I'm just an artist, but you know, my art has sort of turned into activism, and I think it's opened a lot of people's eyes in a way that I never intended, but I'm glad that it did. This is my calling. This is the way that I change the world, is by doing something like this.
It sounds like you may have moments where, enough of this trans stuff, what about my music?
Yeah, and That is exactly right. I've talked to a number of publicists about that, trying to kind of get a handle on that, because to me, the order is artist, then trans person. And a lot of people would want to flip that, I think, you know, and put the emphasis on being trans as opposed to being a musician. And, you know, there's no simple solution to that. But I do feel very, very good, however, knowing that what I'm putting out into the world is just good music. I'm not putting, you know, bad music out there and then hoping everyone listens to it because I'm trans.
I hadn't written this down, but any feel for what percent of transgendered people go stealth? I mean, could that even be measured?
Yeah, I think it's impossible to measure, and I think the only way you could measure something like that is if everybody knew everybody's medical record.
If you could measure it, they wouldn't be stealth.
Right. I mean, I certainly know that percentage, whatever it is much higher among trans men than trans women, because they just have so much, it's just a much harder road for them. I think there's a lot of trans guys. I mean, we can kind of spot each other from time to time, but not a lot of people spot us.
My impression is trans men pass easier than trans women.
Definitely. For the most part, we're just a little shorter and have smaller hands. But other than that, you know, you're right. I mean, because trans women, a lot of trans women, by the time they transition, you know, they've got fuller facial structure and bigger hands and bigger feet and they're taller. And that's the kind of thing that you can't change. The trans men, when we transition, our voices drop. We develop facial hair and, you know, get more musculature. And, you know, trans women, they just don't pass as easy. It's definitely an easier process for trans men than for trans women.
How did you come up with the name of your website?
Cute little white guy. Because that's what I am. I wanted something that felt honest. I couldn't be a poser. I couldn't come up with something that sounded sexier than me, and I couldn't come up with something that sounded... I needed to be able to live up to it, let's put it that way. Like this, I can live up to.
Well, I think I read between the lines on your site that you didn't want to use your name because you want the site to represent more than just your music, because you are also interested in other things.
You did do your homework. That's right. It's not just me, but I like to work with a lot of other artists as well. Especially in the Bay Area, I work with a lot of dancers. I've worked with a number of dance companies, Sarah Bush Dance Project, Zari Leone Dance Theater, and then I've got my own dance company, Free Play Dance Crew, which is a little hip-hop company. And I like to work with basically helping other artists, you know, develop their own, you know, marketing strategies. I mean, they look at me and I've managed to do something. I managed to get actually, you know, a good amount of press. And so what I do is I share what I've learned with other artists about how to create marketing strategies, you know, come up with business plans, really focus what it is they're working on so that they can hopefully, you know, achieve some success with that.
As you heard, you can find out more about Josh at his site, www.cutelittlewhiteguy.com. I'm down to the last song, but before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to especially thank Coyote Grace and Joshua Clip for the wonderful interviews. And there was so much of Josh's interview that I just could not fit into the radio version of this show, so my internet listeners can hear an extended version with a lot more comments and additional music. That, of course, can be found at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I've featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. I hope you stop by next month for part 4 of my series of transgendered artists. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston. I had one more question for Josh. Tell me about the song One Life.
I really started writing it as I was at a memorial service for this wonderful trans woman that I had the privilege of working with in the Transcendence Gospel Choir. And I was sitting in this memorial service, and I really didn't have an opportunity to get to know her that well. But I was listening to all of the people talking about her, and here was this trans woman who had struggled through drugs, prostitution, HIV, all of these really, really horrible things in her life. And yet, everything I knew about her was just beautiful. From her smile to the things that she chose to do with her life, like being on panels and going and talking to medical students about women with HIV. And she took a situation, her life, that was so difficult and so complicated and so hard, and managed to make something so beautiful. And that's when I started writing that song. It's a real opportunity to take something very difficult and make something really, really beautiful out of it, which I think is something that our community, the LGBT community, does all the time. It takes situations where there's a lot of pain and a lot of hurt, and yet what we choose to do with it is call it pride and fly rainbow flags. And I think it's a wonderful thing. So that's why I wrote that song.
On Josh's CD, Won't Stop Now, is two versions of the song One Life, the original version and a remix, and I couldn't decide between them. So here's a bit of each, Joshua Clip and One Life.
Just a smile in your eyes. Thank you for seeing me.